What an incredible day. Unbelievable. Euro 2020 did not disappoint on this Monday as France bows out of the tournament courtesy of a heroic Swiss performance, and Spain and Croatia also give us a thrilling game. I almost even hiccuped on my own words because it was so exciting. Spain go through as well. So it's Spain against Switzerland in the quarterfinals. We have this with Jonathan Johnson to discuss, as well as Tuesday's action, including England against Germany and, of course, Sweden against Ukraine. Que Golazo begins right now. And breathe, everybody. Exhale. What a day. Euro 2020. Incredible. 14 goals from two matches. Unbelievable. Jonathan Johnson in the house. JJ, how are you, my friend?
I mean, kind of relieved and drained in a way after all of that. You know, it's a major roller coaster, but not even just France, Switzerland, you know, but Spain, Croatia before as well. You know, two matches going to extra time, so many goals, so many dramatic moments. Incredible that we managed to pack that in to just two games.
I gotta be honest, it's one of the greatest days of football ever. I'm unbelievable. As you mentioned, two amazing games, so much entertainment, so many goals. We're going to get straight into it, of course, but just an unbelievable plethora of entertainment. Euro 2020 really delivered today, and with some major, major headlines. And we begin, of course, Jonathan Johnson, France. My tip to win it, I know you as well, obviously. I mean, actually, was it? Yeah, you had it, right? You, them in Portugal. Anyway, we're going to talk about it in a second. Regardless, it was a worthy nominee because...
I'm sensing a theme in this already. Don't trust what either of us call his predictions.
Ever. Don't ever trust anything what we say. But no, listen, like, who saw this coming? Honestly, unbelievable. France lose to penalties. Kylian Mbappé misses, or more importantly, I guess Sommer really saves it, and meaning that a heroic Swiss performance, and they go through. They'll be facing Spain in the quarterfinal. That's Friday noon Eastern. Your initial reaction from the game?
I mean, obviously, from a French point of view, it's hugely disappointing, but you have to give credit to Switzerland. I mean, to pull off that fight back, you know, it's just incredible. But there's just so much to unpack from that match. I mean, honestly, it kind of felt like there were just different acts in the whole game. You know, you had the complete waste of a first half by France, you know, where they were playing with this ridiculous three-man defense that they've rarely ever tried. You know, Clément Lenglet was, you know, so out of his depth, it was unreal. Switzerland looked in full control at that point. Ricardo Rodriguez steps up to take the penalty. Could be 2-0. 90 seconds later, France 2-1 up through two Karim Benzema goals. You know, it's just, and then you've got France going 3-1 up with Pogba with his sensational strike, and then Switzerland somehow coming back into it. I mean, in terms of equalizing goals, Gavranovic's composure for that equalizer is just incredible.
Unbelievable.
You know, and then I think it would have been, you know, we were asking a lot for them to keep going after the end of 90 minutes into extra time. And I think it was just, you know, a matter of seeing it out and going to penalties. And it's obviously it's heartbreaking. It's never nice to see any team, you know, lose on penalties. Obviously, you know, major ecstasy for the Swiss fans tonight to do it on spot kicks. You know, they don't have a great record against France, that they now have this, you know, which they can celebrate and rightly will do, because, you know, they deserved it for the character that they showed. And I also think that France, you know, would have really gotten away with it if they'd gone through, considering the tactical mishap or misfire from Deschamps at the beginning of the match, you know, and some of the sloppy play that we've seen from them really throughout the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. Some very good points. You reviewed that game beautifully. I will just add, Karim Benzema had an incredible Hollywood moment where he walks up to Hugo Lloris, tells him something before the penalty. He saves it. In 90 seconds, he scores a brace. One of them, that touch, that Bergkamp-esque touch. Unbelievable. And then, as you mentioned, Switzerland somehow, honestly, in a way, out of nowhere, equalized. Not out of nowhere. I don't want to be that disrespectful, but you know what I mean. You just thought that the narrative was just going to be, okay, this is France. They're going through. Unbelievable. And they didn't. And hats off to Switzerland. They kept fighting in extra time. And Sommer is a very good goalkeeper. He, especially in the set piece situations and penalty takes, and you know, I don't want to completely finger point here to Kylian Mbappe. I don't think it's been his best tournament, but it is not it's kind of unfair to just have everything against them. To your point, I think there's been a lot of moments in this France performance throughout the tournament where you never saw a complete package. And I think today was a good example of that. You saw obviously just how good they are, but today, I mean, the Swiss just had a perfect plan. And you know, in extra time, when they had the ball, they really were just like, let's just slow the tempo down and let's just gamble and let's just see what happens in penalty shootouts. We don't have to go for it right here. And they put their trust in their goalkeeper and their players. And unbelievable. Unbelievable victory.
Look, I don't disagree with you about Kylian Mbappe, but I do think that at some point he's going to have to shoulder a bit of blame for the behavior that's gone on this tournament. Mm. You know, nobody's doubting that he's a phenomenal player. You know, that's not going to change. And this is probably a bit of a David Beckham-esque moment for him. You know, back in the 1998 World Cup when he got sent off against Argentina, was vilified for a while and sort of had to win the nation's trust back. But Mbappe's behavior this tournament, there was no need for it. And, you know, I feel like it was one of the major destabilizing factors in the French camp. You know, many people expected it to be, you know, coming from the reintegration of Karim Benzema, you know, but really there's barely been any tension at all, you know, aside from the very beginning when Giroud's comments were, you know, sort of misconstrued. And then, you know, it's kind of blown up with the whole Mbappe element. And since then, you know, instead of trying to put it into its place and just concentrate on the tournament, you know, Mbappe, you know, almost sort of reveled in it, you know, being in the spotlight in the wrong way, you know, and he's completely put himself in the shade in the tournament. So, you know, I think now that he's got a lot of reflecting to do over the summer, you know, he's been, you know, leading the media on for months and months with talk about his future. You know, what's he going to do? Is he going to stay with PSG and sign a contract extension? Is he going to try and, you know, move on somewhere else? There's no obvious place for him to go at the moment. No one's going to pay the money that PSG wants, you know, and PSG don't want to let a player of his talent go. That talent's not going to disappear overnight because he missed a penalty in this game. Sure, it's going to hurt for a while, but, you know, he will get over it and he's young enough to rebuild, you know, his international reputation after this. It's, you know, it's silly to suggest that, you know, he's going to be labeled, you know, a fraud like I've seen being thrown around on Twitter in the media aftermath of the game. That's not going to happen, but, you know, I think serious questions do need to be asked, because the thing that I saw in the game against Switzerland that worried me more than anything, worried me more than the poor defense, was the number of players questioning Didier Deschamps on the pitch about the tactics France were playing. You know, because if that trust, if that understanding has been broken, then France are going to have to make a major change. And I think it will be, you know, wise for them to dispense with Deschamps if, you know, the players no longer are buying into that system, because the whole reason that France were able to win the World Cup under Deschamps was the fact that they were all pulling in the same direction. And it feels like with this tournament, that's not been the case. And Mbappe, unfortunately, has been one of the most guilty of that.
No, yeah, some very, very good points, my friend. And listen, you know, when L'Équipe reported as well that, you know, the squad was asking Didier Deschamps to revert to this 3-4-3, and you know, the fact that you're a manager and you have to like kind of like appease that in some way, we got Fabrizio Romano saying how, you know, now the French Federation is gonna make some key decisions now with Deschamps, and Zinedine Zidane, who doesn't have a job right now, who might be intrigued by this. I know that it's definitely Florentino Perez did say that it's one of Zidane's wishes at some point to manage it. So is this the end of Didier Deschamps, do you think?
I don't think necessarily it's the end of Didier Deschamps right now, you know, but I do think that there will be a period of reflection. And the one thing that I would say in Deschamps' favor is if he feels like the players have undermined him, you know, and that they're not following his instructions through anymore, he feels that there's been, you know, sort of another explosion of ego within the camp, which he's tried so hard to stamp out over the years, then I think that he would probably recognize that it's better for him to step aside now than try to lead France to 2022 success. You know, because obviously now for France to hold both the world and European titles, he's going to have to wait, you know, a pretty long time. And I don't see him seeing out another two international tournaments with France. You could make a case for 2022 still, but I think this has been a major setback. I think it made more sense to keep Deschamps on if France won Euro 2020. And now that we know that they've gone out, you know, I don't think that it would be that's silly a decision from the FFF, to make a play for Zidane, especially as he is available right now.
Yep. No, I agree. I mean, hit it while it's hot. And he's got no job right now. And it's one of his wishes. So we'll see what happens. But anyway, congratulations to Switzerland, who will now face Spain. Let's quickly talk about that game, because that was fun too. Spain against Croatia. Unbelievable. Obviously we can go through it back and forth, but the main component, at least from the 90 minutes, was how Croatia equalized in the dying seconds of that game, making it 3-0. You know, it began with Unai Simon calamity of an own goal, but he did redeem himself at the beginning of stoppage time when it looked like Croatia was set to score a goal and they didn't. And then in the end, Spain victorious. Unbelievable. Another amazing game, Jonathan Johnson.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things as well that I found, most incredible was that they both pretty much followed the same, plot. Well, basically up until the end of the 90 minutes, because you had one team going ahead 1-0, the other then going 3-1 up, and then the other team pulling back to 3-3 before the end of 90 minutes. It's fantastic entertainment, especially if you're neutral, and you're not sort of invested in it emotionally. But also when you are rooting for one of those teams, especially if they come out on top, it's a pretty great feeling to see your team be able to perform to that level. And I think Spain deserved it overall. I'm delighted for Pablo Sarabia, as somebody that I see week in, week out at PSG, to have that sort of success on the international stage. I mean, own goals have just been a recurring theme throughout the whole tournament. It's pretty obvious we're probably going to hit double figures for them. I think we're on 9 already. Now we just need one more to get to 10. The Croats as well, to be able to pull that off with two quick fire goals so late in the game, like the Swiss, it was just it was incredible. But instead of the Swiss being able to see it out to penalties and then win on spot kicks, the Croats, they kind of felt spent at the end of that 3-3. You kind of felt like all it would take would be Spain to get the one goal and then they would collapse. And that's how it turned out with those two quick fire goals for the Spanish. So I'm happy to see Luis Enrique's men advancing, considering that they found their scoring touch now, but they were very difficult to watch at the beginning of the tournament. And I don't think that's necessarily down to, coaching pragmatism like France, like England. I think that's just because that there wasn't really, that much of a plan for the Spanish. It was sort of stick with the tactic of old, pass the opponent to death, and it doesn't necessarily work anymore. And I think, these last couple of matches in the Euro have really shown Spain now that they need to just wake up, go at it with the attacking tools that they have, and they could still go far. And I think they will be breathing a huge sigh of relief, having seen France fall here, because now that makes a deep run, a very real possibility for them.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And listen, sometimes the answer is simpler than we think. To your point, Spain just sticks with the same program, but I think they were just faster now, right? Their decision-making is faster in the final third. Morata's a little bit more mobile. Jordi Alba's pushing, the midfield to go with him, but also the return of Sergio Busquets has helped tremendously to get that cover to man of the match performances, of course. But it's the same old system for Luis Enrique. And like he always says, and I've said this before, like a bottle of champagne, Spain is. Once it pops, everything flows into rhythm. It's going
to
be...
You've been listening to too much Luis Enrique.
I love Luis Enrique. He's so interesting to me. It was very funny ahead of that game against Croatia when the reporter asked him, are you going to change your formation? And he was like, maybe. Or maybe, and then the reporter was like, no. And he's like, bravo, just teasing everybody. I love it.
To be honest, I think there's more of a chance of him changing his outfit than changing formation.
100%, 100%.
But I'm glad you brought up Busquets, because the one thing that I do really feel in both of the games today is that we saw the outstanding performance from the middle of the pitch. I think Busquets was phenomenal for Spain. And I think it's a real shame for the tournament that Pogba's going home with France, because although the French have been underwhelming at times, I think that Pogba's had a fantastic tournament. And he, for me, has really he's seen his stock rise even higher. I mean, you know, we saw him already being a key component for the 2018 World Cup success, and he's just grown and matured even more. You know, you've now got Manchester United fans hoping that he's going to stick around for longer because they can see, you know, just how much quality he has when he's played in a system that plays to his strengths, and he's paired with somebody that he has a real understanding with. I think regardless of whether it's Deschamps or Zidane, who's coaching France at the 2022 World Cup, France really need to do whatever they can to keep Pogba, at this moment in his international career, because the form that he's producing for Les Bleus every time he takes to the pitch with them is sensational.
Yep, one of the most impressive performances I've seen with Paul Pogba and France, definitely even in that loss to Switzerland. All right, well, that you have it. Spain against Switzerland. If you had that at the very beginning of the tournament, well, please give me a
probably
call.
Probably a rich man right now.
Yeah, I would love to know some lottery numbers from you, please. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable stuff. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to preview Tuesday's action, which includes England against Germany. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Got your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome back, everybody, to Que Golazo Euro 2020. We are talking Tuesday's action, England against Germany, Jonathan Johnson. Before we discuss, I just want to mention a few betting tips here from our own Lee Phelps. He has England winning and under 2.5 goals. That's over 350, plus 350 in William Hill. That's a pretty good bet. He doesn't have it. He's just giving you some choices here. Kai Havertz over 2 shots, plus 125. And Kai Havertz to be carded, plus 350. That's some interesting ones. We'll be talking about the Sweden-Ukraine game in a second, but the England win and under 2.5 goals is an intriguing one. England haven't conceded a goal yet. Remember, everybody, but Germany are looking a little bit more adventurous going forward. All right, Jonathan Johnson, England against Germany. The rivalry for some, especially the Germans, it might be a different type of idea of what a rivalry means. But we obviously know, you know, England haven't beaten Germany in a major competition since, of course, the World Cup in 1966. They lost us to Euro 96 as well. They had that 5-1 win in the World Cup qualifier in 2001. You know, there's history obviously everywhere, but the Germans obviously definitely in the modern game have been way more successful. How do you see this one, England against Germany?
Well, you know, I really, really hope that we're not looking at under 2.5 goals, because I think we've all been spoiled so much today that the next game that doesn't deliver sort of more than like 5 or 6 goals is going to be seen as a major disappointment, which is kind of why I'm a bit worried about the final matchup tomorrow between Sweden and Ukraine. But who knows? I mean, yeah. This tournament's showing itself to be so unpredictable now that really anything can happen. You know, England really could come out of their shell, and show their true attacking potential. But also at the same time, Germany now have nothing to lose, because I remember saying this when we previewed the tournament, that if they were to somehow get out of the group stage, that's already a success for them. And to be honest, they've somehow managed to do that despite being a bit of a car crash on the pitch. You know, they had that win over Portugal, which, you know, at the time kind of sent a few ripples through the tournament. And then obviously we've seen Portugal underwhelm, since and go home. So, it's going to be a fascinating one for me. If I had to have picked a game before all of these kicked off that would go to extra time and penalties, I actually probably would have said England and Germany. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see it go beyond 90. But I just think that there's so much at stake on both sides. I think obviously... It's a major occasion for England. It's a massive opportunity as well for them. And I also think it's kind of like a final chance for Southgate, because I think if England are to fall flat here and go out to Germany, I'm not sure that he'll survive it. I think that he will be one of the managerial casualties. It feels like England have almost gone as far as they can under him. I'm not convinced that England will go on and win the tournament. I know some people are, but I do think that they definitely have enough in the squad to get past Germany. So, I'm tempted to say that, England will win this comfortably, but I think there's so much history attached to it. The players know the importance of it, the fans as well. And for me, I think that they're probably still going to over-focus on that. So like I said earlier, it really wouldn't surprise me to see this go beyond 90. I have a sneaking suspicion that Germany might be party poopers. But like I said, if England can unlock that attacking potential, and I really hope, trying to put my Aston Villa bias aside, that Jack Grealish plays a significant role in that, then I think anything is possible.
Anything is possible. Listen, just a few things. Just a quick correction, everybody. England haven't been in Germany in the knockout stages of a major tournament since the World Cup in 66. But regardless, a few things from what you said. I mean, listen, here's the problem. Gareth Southgate wants everybody to forget about the history. And to your point, sometimes you can't. Definitely from an England side. Germany, I'm not so sure. But English fans and the team itself, they know that England-Germany means a lot, right? So that's already in it. The other part of it, which is something that we discuss a lot here with our friend Jimmy as well, is that England are one of these teams that Gareth Southgate still doesn't know his best 11. He still doesn't understand. Like, he still is trying to figure it out. And if you don't by this point know that a player like Bukayo Saka or Jack Grealish really should be playing, and you can try and fit it within a system that can help them, then I don't know what to tell you, because Germany is going to come here and they're going to punish me. Defensively, they're vulnerable, okay? And, the depth of England, I think, will help them, especially I think substitutions will be a key thing in this game. The further the game goes along and the further it goes to extra time, somebody like Marcus Rashford comes in late, he's fresh, he feels good, he can probably be a problem against Germany. And when they play this 3-4-2-1 system as well, is something that worries me. I still don't trust the fact that Kimmich is not really playing in the middle, like it's more on the right. That kind of worries me a little bit. I'm agreeing. I don't want it to be a boring 1-0, but I feel like it's gonna be. I'm tempted to go with England for all the points that you just said. But being a party pooper from a German perspective is not something that would surprise me at all.
One other thing that we haven't discussed is the fact that England are pretty much the only team who are still going to be able to call on home advantage. I think that is a massive boost that nobody else can call upon. We've already seen what happens to the likes of the Netherlands when you take that away. And I think Italy as well. Italy struggled up against Austria until they finally managed to make the breakthrough through that fantastic Chiesa goal. So, I think that home advantage, England really need to make it count, because if they don't, they'll be kicking themselves, because, you're looking at some of the big names that are falling out of this tournament, and it's a massive opportunity for them. I mean, okay, it's a bit too early to sort of be thinking about potentially winning it. I know that Phil Foden's already talked about it and the possibility of dyeing their hair blonde if they manage to go all the way. Put that out of your minds, and if you're just sort of concentrating on reaching the next round, England do have a good chance. It's it's just about whether. I think Southgate as well should look at what's happened, with the likes of Deschamps, because he's pretty much mirroring Deschamps' approach to the 2018 World Cup, very pragmatic, sort of hoping that his team grows into it. And then Deschamps tries to make an inexplicable change in the formation against Switzerland and gets punished for it. So if Southgate sticks to what he knows, which is pretty much the only thing that Joachim Löw can really be praised for at this moment in time,
then you know, I think that you know they have a better chance of winning. I don't think it'll necessarily be pretty, you know, but I think that might be the most effective way to do it here.
Yeah, you made a very good point about Wembley. I think England still haven't used Wembley to their advantage yet. I haven't seen that yet. I haven't seen that over, and I feel like this could be the game where they do that. The other thing that I'm intrigued to is, as we think about formations, I wonder if Gareth Southgate will try and mirror what Germany does with a three at the back and they just pushes with the wing backs, or, you know, Harry Maguire should obviously start, but then you think about and the Kyle Walker and Luke Shaw situation, how wide can they go? And then the final thing is obviously, as you all should know, that by Monday night, Mason Mount and Chilwell's isolation restrictions are over. And they should be available for this game. You know, obviously Chilwell, I'm not sure, but Mason Mount is a major part of this. So that has to be spoken for as well. All right. So, okay, well then let's do it then. Give me a prediction here. What do you think? Your score prediction. Go ahead.
I'm going to say it goes to extra time and Germany win 2-1 in extra time. And you know what? While we're still on that point, you know why England have never tapped into Wembley's potential?
Why is that?
It's a crap stadium.
Yeah,
so it's a controversial opinion. Having been there, and it's not just the fact that I was there when Villa lost; it's just a bad experience as a fan.
You feel, what is it? Is it the acoustics, or is it, you know?
It's a bit of everything.
You've been to the old Wembley, right? You went to the old Wembley Stadium.
Yeah, and it's nothing compared to that. I mean, I think the thing I hate the most about Wembley is the VIP area.
Right.
And I think that's the grudge that most people hold against it, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. Because the old Wembley, I've been there many times, and that gave you real feels. And I feel that the new one obviously doesn't give you that. But a very good point. But we will see what happens. I'm going to go with an England win. I can't agree with you, JJ, and give a Germany win. And then we end this podcast like this. It's ridiculous. So I will give an England win, but it's not going to be an exciting game. It's not going to be a Tuesday situation. I'll do 1-0 England. And there you have it, because there's no other way. There's no way that I see a goal first. That's for damn sure. All right. Well, let's talk about Sweden against Ukraine, which, you know, on the face of it, it could be the least interesting one, but you never know. I mean, Ukraine, you know, they nearly, you know, tied against the Netherlands. They got some goals in them. Yarmolenko is doing his thing, led, of course, by Andriy Shevchenko. And Sweden, on their own hand, have been really riding their own luck and been taking advantage of a lot of situations. Emil Forsberg, a good player, controlling the midfield. How do you see this one?
You know what? I see this one actually taking people by surprise and being quite entertaining.
Yeah.
I can't say that it's going to top Spain, Croatia, or France, Switzerland. But we live in hope. But I think this one for me, to be honest, it really wouldn't surprise me if Ukraine managed to get it done sort of by one goal. I definitely see both teams scoring. I hope for Alexander Isak that he manages to get himself on target, because he's done really well this tournament. I feel he's one of those players, who's really raised his profile, certainly at an international level. I think that for all the industry that he's shown, he definitely deserves something at the end of it. But also Ukraine as well. I've seen this team progressing over the last couple of months. I saw them up close when they came to Paris in a World Cup qualifier. And I really thought then that they'd be tough to beat this summer. And it's kind of proved to be the case. And they have that ability to just score these stunning goals out of nowhere, seemingly. Yeah. So for me, I can see this going similar way to Sweden, Poland in the group stage, but with Ukraine coming out on top instead of Sweden. So I'm going to say, I'm going to be very optimistic and say 3-2.
3-2. Well, hopefully we get a good game like that. By the way, just some notes from Leif Phelps here. If you are looking at this game, Sweden to win and both teams to score, that's plus 400. It's not bad. And for Forsberg to score, Sweden to win and both teams to score, that's 1,100. That's pretty good. That's some good stuff there from Leif Phelps. Ukraine are a very inconsistent, or inconsistent is probably not the word. I don't know. Unpredictable team. You know, they
score. Capricious.
Yeah, I like that. There you go. They score 4 goals. They conceded 5. So it's they'll give you some, but they also allow you to play as well. And Sweden, I feel they're a bit more contained, collectively organized. But I'm with you. I think this is a game where we will see goals. I don't know if it'll be 3-2, but we will see goals. I have Sweden winning this one, riding their luck, taking advantage of the fact that they've already experienced similar opponents in their group, and they'll go through. But I wouldn't be surprised if it goes the other way, and I wouldn't be surprised if this goes into extra time. So, you know, you said Ukraine, right? Or did you say Sweden too?
Yeah, no, I said Ukraine.
And well, there you go. Andrei Shevchenko's team.
And then that'll reignite. Well, if it is Sweden, it'll reignite the old England-Sweden rivalry from the early 2000s.
That's right. And everybody remembers that Zlatan Ibrahimovic goal against England as well. That was pretty special as well. But so much to look forward to. There's no way, Jonathan Johnson, that Tuesday's action will copy Monday. Is there? Do you think? No chance. 14 goals on Monday, Jonathan Johnson.
Yeah, it's stunning. I'm really not sure we're going to see anything that will rival this for the remainder of the knockout phase. But then again, we keep saying this kind of thing. You know, we said that we didn't think that we'd see some of the drama that was produced on the final match days in the group, again, in the knockout phase. And then we've had a day like this, which, you know, has just blown all of our expectations away. I mean, I think this day has set the bar particularly high, you know, but I do think that we will still see, you know, probably some more very entertaining ties in the quarterfinals. I'm not sure that, you know, these final set of round of 16 games will be the pick of the round, you know, but I'm definitely expecting good things from the quarterfinals, looking at the way that it's shaping up at the moment.
Absolutely. What a day. And can't wait to have more of this. And Jonathan Johnson, make sure that you read all his content on cbsports.com, as well as follow him on Twitter, John_LeGossip. JJ, final thoughts before we say goodbye, my friend.
Yeah, obviously, you know, disappointed that France haven't managed to go all the way. But considering the way that the tournament's gone since the start, it's not been a major surprise. I mean, things started to go awry a little bit in Hungary, you know, and then they struggled against Portugal as well. You know, I'm glad that there was some entertaining football along the way, some great stories, you know, Hungary going so close to a shock win and then ultimately falling short. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, France have been unable to get that European crown to go with the world title. And now I think it's time that they really make some serious decisions about the future, because obviously, you know, sticking with the status quo on the evidence of this tournament is not the way forward. And if this happens to be Didier Deschamps' final, you know, last dance as France coach, then, you know, he's done a fantastic service to his country. But it seems like France already have their successor waiting in the wings if the French Football Federation decide to make that change now.
Yeah, you heard it here first. I feel Zinedine Zidane is going to manage France by the end of the year. But we will see what happens. I mean, that would be amazing. Jonathan Johnson, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much, man.
Likewise. Thanks a lot for having me on. Pleasure to be with you and looking forward to the next one.
Hey, everybody. I want to thank Jonathan Johnson for joining me today. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Que Golazo Pod. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, youtube.com/Que Golazo, and of course, CBS Sports and your CBS Sports app. We have plenty more coverage. Make sure that you stay with us throughout the tournament and beyond. Have a great, great day.